Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long in studio at 545. Steve Geller will join us for our Bet 365 triple option feature. At 435, Chesa Boucher from Baton Rouge Proud covers the LSU baseball team. Will be on with us to talk about the region out in Chapel Hill. And then at 520, Tim Brando from Fox Sports will come on. And Tim can talk about LSU baseball, LSU football, college football, NFL football. We'll go around the gambit with Tim Brando at 5:20. Charlie, last night, disappointment, certainly. And, man, you and I, we texting one another. It gets to the ninth inning, and it looks as though, man, we talked about this before the show yesterday. How many more lives does the Cat have with LSU? And ran out of lives yesterday. With North Carolina, who, man, they just hung in there. 4-3 win over LSU in the Chapel Hill Regional. They move on now. And, you and I were talking about this yesterday. Is there a better outfield in college baseball?
It's hard to think of one, Mike.
Than with the Tar Heels. They were really good there. But 4-3, Heartbreak City. But it was to see the grittiness of LSU. One time, 3-12 in the SEC, questioning if this team could even make it to the SEC tournament. They had never won a series, a three-game sweep series. They do it the last week of the season against Ole Miss. And to see how everything sort of broke, you had an opportunity last night, just wasn't meant to be. And it does go to show you that, you know, because after they win the national championship last year, Bob and I had talked about this along with Charlie so much about, okay, it's different each year. The college sports merry-go-round doesn't stop. You have to jump on. And it's not, oh, next man up. Depends on who the next man is. When you look at losing guys like Skeens and Dylan Cruz, and then you had some key points in there, too, with a Trey Morgan, Gavin Dugas, who's from my neck of the woods now, and I think he's in Double-A. Baseball today, that it was going to be tough for this team to get back to Omaha, but they gave it one heck of a ride, Charlie. One whirl of a ride.
I guess we'll talk about the game first, and then we'll kind of recap the season afterwards. I mean, this game was crazy, Mike. You kind of talked about the nine lives that the Cat had, and there were a couple really tight moments, right, where you thought, oh, UNC is going to break it open. It started in the top of the first. I mean, yeah. Against Sam Dutton, they get three straight hits to load the bases, but then Javon Coleman comes out of the pen, gets a huge double play, gets out of the inning, only gives up two runs. It's gigantic. So North Carolina takes that early 2-0 lead, and when you give up two runs that quickly, you always have to respond, and LSU did. And the next three innings, they scored a run apiece. A couple solo shots by Jared Jones, and obviously Jake Brown helped that too. They take a 3-2 lead after the third inning. The issue here, Mike, was that, and Jay Johnson talked about this, about North Carolina, they're the highest-ranked non-SEC team in the country, and he said that they're built to potentially win the whole thing. Like, to go in Omaha, that they're kind of built for that type of park, and they host West Virginia on the way there. So we'll see what happens with UNC, but their bullpen just locked down LSU's offense after that point. LSU had taken that 3-2 lead, and we'll talk about, and let's do it right now, Will Helmers, the performance that he had, Mike.
Unbelievable performance.
There's no other word other than heroic, right? I mean, the senior comes in, he had 17 2/3 innings pitched all season long, and they kept him out there for 5 2/3 shutout innings. He gives up only two hits in that process, four strikeouts, two walks. He was phenomenal. He kept LSU in the game, but LSU's offense couldn't take advantage. And then eventually, once it gets down to the later innings, Nate Ackenhausen, and you and I talked a little bit about this, Mike, and kind of in retrospect, he throws that one inning, you know, maybe he was a little bit gassed from the weekend of work, and so he throws a shutout inning, it goes to the ninth, LSU still is clinging on to that 3-2 lead. Once again, they had one hit after the third inning. Mike, from the third all the way into the tenth, they had one hit.
But we've seen this throughout the year, Charlie. That had been part of this team. Now, they got hot with the bats late, but we've seen this sort of scenario throughout the regular season where you got pretty good pitching at times, but the bats just weren't there for you. Last night was a perfect example of that, that kind of got right back into the picture of what we saw during the regular season.
And people, I mean, plenty of people were blaming Jake Brown, the freshman, for that loss. I don't see it at all. I think that the reason that you lost is because you scored three games in an elimination game on the road against the number four team in the country. That wasn't going to cut it. You asked everything of your pitching staff, and Will Helmers gave you everything. And Nate Atkinson gave you all he could for that one inning that he was in there. They go to Gage Jump, their ace, out of the bullpen in the ninth. He gives up that leadoff double, and I instantly text you. I'm like, uh-oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
And they get that run to score. They keep it at one, so it goes to extra innings. And then, as I mentioned, people are blaming Jake Brown for it. The misplayed ball out in right field. He drops a fly ball, ends up getting the runner to second base. And Mike, the single two-out hit, you can go look this up, the only two-out hit that North Carolina had all night long was in the 10th inning, and it scored the winning run. So LSU falls 4-3. I mean, heartbreaker is the way to use it. You had a 3-2 lead after the third inning, and you clung on to it all the way into the ninth where they tied it, and then they take the lead in the 10th, and you aren't able to respond. So your season comes to an end. And as I mentioned, we were going to recap the game first and then kind of talk about the season as a whole. I mean, Jay Johnson is fantastic. Like, there's no other word for it, Mike. I texted you about this afterwards.
He did one heck of a job.
He took a team that was 3-12 in SEC. They were dead in the water after those first 5 weeks against some of the best teams in the country, where they played Arkansas, they played Florida, they played Vanderbilt, they played Mississippi State, and they were 3-12 after that first 15-game stretch in Tennessee as well. How can I forget? That was the last series that got them to 3-12. And the road to get into not just postseason conversation, but to get to Hoover was going to be tough. But they go 10-5 over their final 15 games. They swept Ole Miss in the final week of the season. They make it to Hoover. And then all of a sudden, you go on a run in Hoover. You go 4-1. You make it all the way to the SEC championship game. You lose to the best team in the country in Tennessee. And then you go to Chapel Hill, the number four team in the country in North Carolina. You lose that winner's bracket game against them, and it's looking kind of bad. You come out of the loser's bracket and force a winner-take-all game seven, and you lose like that. Like, it's tough. But at the same time, you know that Jay Johnson's the right guy leading this team, because we talked about this as well. It almost feels like this is the floor for a Jay Johnson-led LSU
it's
team.
Not the ceiling.
Well, we saw what the ceiling was. The ceiling was last year.
The ceiling was the national championship.
Exactly. So, you know, once again, Jay Johnson's the right guy leading the program. You kind of heard him talk about it, how proud he was of this team, that they didn't quit after that 3-12 start in SEC play. And they really were basically an inning away from hosting a super regional on the path to Omaha.
You know, one of the things on the positive side for next year is he played a lot of freshmen this year. And four guys, a tremendous amount. But again, it goes back to the merry-go-round. It doesn't stop for you to jump on. So the key now is going to be, and we'll talk about this on the next segment, what do they have to look for next season through the portal? Because now that has become the interlock here across the board, all across college football and baseball, to seal up spots here. You have a nice kind of cement ground with the freshmen that came in here that made quite an impact. Now you've got to be able to go out and get some transfer portal guys that can come in here and fill in some of the other slots. And you're going to lose people. Graduation. Some people are going to leave. Some people are going to transfer out. The draft. Everything else. Now you've got to be able to get the right people here. And with the success Jay has had, I think that'll attract people to Baton Rouge.
Yeah, the transfer portal is going to be one of the most intriguing things to watch this offseason for LSU, and also seeing who ends up leaving through the draft. We have an idea of who's going to be gone.
And I remember the first show we did with him afterwards and asked him, what did you do in the offseason last year? He said, I went visit that pitcher that pitched at Alabama.
Yeah.
He said, that was the first thing I did. So you can see, even in winning a national championship, his vision was for the next day. What are we going to do afterwards?
Right. So a couple things about this LSU future, you know, with this roster, is that you saw the development of some freshmen that are going to be key pieces of the future. We saw Jake Brown. We saw Ashton Larson. We saw, obviously, Steven Monster Milam, who kind of became a superstar late in the season, by the way. And then also a piece that I think will have a really bright future. Maybe he didn't get as much run late. He had some play in the regionals as well. Was Cade Anderson, the pitcher, a freshman pitcher, very highly touted guy. I think that he's going to be a key piece of this team moving forward. So what Jay decides to do in the portal, there's obviously some holes that he'll have to plug up. We'll be covering it throughout the offseason, what he decides to go do and go get. But there are going to be some pieces, I think, that he brings in to help make sure that this next year's team is going to be an Omaha type of club.
give you the final stats for Will Helmers last night. He faced 21 batters, 47 strikes, 4 strikeouts, 2 hits, no earned runs, in 5 innings pitched.
It was a career-high 5 2/3 innings pitched, Mike, and not only just
that. Your boy did good.
There was a stretch where he retired 12 straight batters. And going back to, once again, Sam Dutton struggled at the start. He gives up those 3 hits, and then he gets pulled. After those 3 hits for UNC, they went on a stretch where they were 1 of 18, Mike. Yeah. So the bullpen for
LSU.
They
got as cold as LSU.
Coleman and Helmers and even Ackenhausen were fantastic, and they really kept them in it. But we have a text here from, let's see, 2614, said, "Hey, Charlie, I told everyone for a long time that solo shots do not win games. They needed base runners. They did not get them last night." And that is 100% correct. One thing that stood out, on top of the 5 hits that they had, LSU only 1 hit, once again, from the 4th through the 10th innings, is they only had 2 walks last night. And that's a credit to UNC's pitching staff.
No, you got to give UNC credit there.
They're a legit team. Like, there's a reason they're the number 4 team in the country, the highest ranked non-SEC squad. Like, UNC is pretty complete top to bottom. As far as defense, which they played excellent defense last night.
Man, their defense has been awesome.
They got some great pitching performances. And, I mean, they have some superstar-level players offensively. We talked about their outfield of Honeycutt, Cook, and D'Onofrio. I mean, Mike, if you're looking for a team outside of the SEC to win the whole thing, it might be UNC.
It may well be. I think certainly a lot of money has swung to Tennessee. And I get that. After watching them play, you would understand that. But North Carolina's right there.
Yeah, I have the odds, and we'll bring that up here in just a little bit.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettey along with Charlie Long in studio. We told you that we'd give you the odds in Vegas. Now, a lot of people want to jump on this early before the field sort of condenses, because you get a better shot on bang for the dollar. So, Charlie, you have that for us.
Yeah, via Bet Online, we got some odds updates here. Tennessee is obviously the favorite. Yeah. They're at 11-4, which via the number is plus 275 to win the College World Series. Second best odds, Texas A&M is 7-2, which is plus 350. And then going further down the line, Florida State, Kentucky, and North Carolina are all tied at 8-1. A couple of things to keep an eye on here. NC State, who won their regional, their odds jumped from 40-1 to 18-1 from prior to the regional round. And then Florida, same thing. Their odds jumped from 50-1 to 25-1 after they won the Stillwater regional, Mike. They're a little bit further down the list. Keeping going down from those 3 teams that were 8-1, we also have Georgia's 10-1, Clemson and Oregon State are 12-1. Virginia's 14-1, North Carolina State, as I mentioned, 18-1, Florida 25-1, and then it gets pretty high up there. West Virginia 40-1, Kansas State 50-1, Oregon 50-1, UConn 100-1, and Evansville, the 4 seed that shocked the world by winning the ECU regional, 150-1 as they headed up to Knoxville this weekend to face
Tennessee.
Get
your money on that Evansville, right, Charlie?
150-1, Mike. I can't do it though, because they're going to Tennessee. It's a great story,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it is a great story.
If you're
story.
Looking at it, a lot of host sites really did take care of business. A couple of teams that won that weren't hosts: Florida, West Virginia, Kansas State, Oregon, UConn. All 3 seeds, by the way. And that's what I'll use for my triple options.
Man, my thing about it is, Charlie, if Florida makes it to Omaha, and we've talked about Florida all year long. Okay, they got talent on Florida. Now, sometimes they don't play up to that talent, and their pitching is matza-matza. It's sort of shaky. They do have the superstar.
Yes, they do.
Caglione. And man, for Florida to get here, and they had a really difficult schedule, but, man, they're showing they've started to get hot at the right time, and they one series away.
I think it was Mark Etheridge that put it out there on Twitter, and he made a great point that Florida came out of the loser's bracket to win the Stillwater Regional and beat Oklahoma State. And one thing that stood out is that Florida had all these issues in midweeks, Mike, where they didn't have the pitching depth.
No.
And their pitching depth helped them win that regional. So all of a sudden, if Florida gets hot, I mean, they're going to Clemson this weekend, the number 6 team in the country, so that's another tough matchup, but they very well could win that super regional and get to Omaha, where, you know, I think there's, so just resetting the bracket, there are 5 SEC teams remaining. Tennessee.
Yeah, because we got asked about that yesterday, potential of 6 if LSU.
But LSU had lost.
But LSU lost.
So there's Tennessee,
5.
Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, and Texas A&M. Are the 5 SEC teams remaining. There's also 5 ACC teams remaining with UNC, Clemson, Virginia, Florida State, and NC State. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of mixture we get, because it is possible that Omaha, Mike, could be just straight up 8 teams from the SEC and ACC, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think you might be right on that. Look at this texter, and he asked about, he said, Mike and Charlie, I just tuned in. Unsure if you've already touched on this, but if you haven't, this is his opinion on putting in a cold gauge jump to close the game when Nate was doing just fine pitching. Man, that's why they pay managers a lot of money. And, okay, Jay Johnson will never say it, but I bet that kept him up last night. You're not going to publicly say that, but you can always second guess yourself on decisions like that. You can always look and say, man, if I maybe just kept back in there, maybe things would have been different. But that's why they pay you that money, to make those decisions. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't on that spot. And we don't know what would have happened with Achenhauser. We don't know what would have happened with him, but I've heard with this, let me see, it's 22:57. I went to fill up my truck. I heard it from two different people while I was filling up. Man, yeah. What happened on that spot? So that's why they pay you that money, put you in that spot to make those tough decisions. But as soon as they put them in, you and I text one another, here comes gauge jump.
Yes, yes, we did. So the issue with the gauge jump question is, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
We say that all the time. So
that's why we got second guess.
And Achenhauser had a great performance in the eighth inning. He struck out the side. He looked awesome. But at the same time, how much was it kind of him emptying the tank, right, to get that to that point? And so gauge jump, I think it was probably planned that he would pitch the ninth inning. If they had the lead, they had the lead. He had thrown 102 pitches on Friday, so there was a little bit of a question mark about, you know, how ready was he to throw on short rest after, once again, throwing 102 pitches versus Wofford a couple days before. And you could tell he wasn't his normal self. Gives up the leadoff double, and then the tying run comes in to score instantly. And then he has to overextend, and he pitches the 10th inning as well. So I don't think that was really a part of the plan. I think they were just hoping that he could go out and get them three outs. It didn't work out that way. And so, I mean, once again, we can second-guess that all
we want.
Well,
the other thing, too, is we don't know what Achenhauser might have told people once that inning ended.
So that's the question. And I
don't know. None of us know that. Would he maybe told Jay or the pitching coach to make that decision? But I agree with you. I thought that decision had been made.
I think it was a lead. Yes.
Gauge jumps coming in and finish it.
I think so. I think that's what I would kind of anticipate it having been, is that maybe they would have thrown Achenhauser in the eighth regardless, and they had a plan. They were just going to see, how can we get to the eighth inning, throw Achenhauser here, and then their gauge jump in the ninth. And if we have the lead, that should take us home. And Will Helmers threw that incredible performance, and he got them there. So I bet they were feeling great about it. But once again, gauge jump just didn't have his stuff.
Sometimes it don't work out. And I say, sometimes the cat run out of lives on here. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. We'll have on with us Chessa Boucher, who covers the LSU Tiger baseball team, basketball team, football team for Baton Rouge Proud. She'll be on with us to talk LSU baseball right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line from Baton Rouge Proud. She covers the LSU baseball, LSU basketball, LSU football. Can't put that all on a business card. Chessa Boucher, thank you, Chess, for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Chessa, one of the things you got to say, I think all of us knew this year would look different from a year ago. And it's hard to replace talents like a Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz. Charlie and I talked about it. You know, even people like Trey Morgan, Gavin Dugas, those type of people. It's difficult because not only you lose the talent, but you also lose a little bit of chemistry. And now it's ever changing now in college sports, that the chemistry wise, you got to build throughout the season. I thought Jay did a very, very good job this year. Kind of try to steady the wheel when you 3-12, you're struggling. You and I talked about it. We didn't even know if this team could make it to the SEC tournament. And then they get there, and then you thought it was going to be a short stay, so you just brought one bag with you instead of the two or three. So you had to find the laundry after. One of the things I think gets overlooked in this is when you're trying to recycle a team and retool it, it's a lot more difficult than what the average person out on the street thinks it is. Not only because of talent, but also because of the chemistry part.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest key pieces to this team and why they struggled in the first half of SEC play was because of the chemistry. What I saw from the team, a lot of the guys from last year's team, the national championship team, it was almost like a divide of the guys that won it and then the new guys that came in, and they didn't really mesh very well. And you could tell, like, even talking with Michael Braswell, he said there was kind of a different vibe heading into the season. And then when Jay kind of put the clamps down and he took away the phones and he's like, no, we're going to be a team. I think they really came together. And I'll be honest with you, Mike, I kind of hated on Tommy White there for a few weeks, so talking about how he didn't have a ton of leadership and he was more of a doer and just not a born leader. But in the back half, and especially in postseason, I saw Tommy kind of come into his own of taking charge of this team and being that front runner for this team. And I think that was a lot of the things that they missed. They just didn't have a true leader. You talked about a Trey Morgan. You talked about a Dylan Cruz, who was a silent leader, but he was a leader with his play on the field, and especially Paul Skeens, an absolute alpha male who those guys wanted to follow. And I think a lot of that, the problems in the front half of the SEC play, it all came down to chemistry and leadership, and I think he lacked two of those with this team. I think in the back half, you saw some of these true freshmen come in and take on roles that you might not have expected from younger guys, and they started learning how to win. Before, it was like they didn't know how to win, and then all of a sudden, they put a few wins together, and they were like, oh, this is how it goes. So it was such a tough loss last night to sit there and watch. I was actually telling my boyfriend, I was like, the year before, we knew this team. We were watching a national championship team, and we knew they had it in them. But to see the turnaround of the underdog of being like, oh, hell yeah, we're about to, like, go on this run, you really fall in love with a team like that of seeing them do the unthinkable. And so when it comes to essentially two outs in the SEC championship game against Tennessee and then essentially two more outs against UNC, the number four team in the country, it hurts a little bit more. So today I might not be as hyped up as I normally am. It sucks. It sucks that it's over with.
Well, you're a former athlete, okay? You're a former college athlete. You understand the heartbreak of losing. It's like Wide World of Sports playback. But I think what you brought up, the freshmen, they're the building blocks for next year for this team. What do you look at position-wise that they'll be looking at in the transfer portal? Because that is such a big part now, especially college basketball and now college baseball also. It plays a part in college football, but I think in baseball and basketball, it's a bigger piece of the puzzle.
Oh, it's huge, and I don't envy Jay Johnson. I will tell you that the teams that are in the super regionals and the teams that are going to Omaha better watch out, because Jay Johnson now has a lot more free time to go out there, and we know he is the portal king when it comes to getting recruits to come to LSU. Position-wise, I think it's hard to really figure out what you need just because of what you're losing. You have seven that are completely out of eligibility, so they're gone. Then you have four guys that are going to the draft with Holman, Jump, Tommy White, and Thatcher Hurd, I would assume, all go to the draft. And then you have some other guys like Jared Jones, who's a draft-eligible sophomore. You have Griffin Herring, who's a draft-eligible sophomore. And then someone like Michael Braswell, who he improved drastically from last year at South Carolina, where he wasn't your everyday starter and he was kind of used here and there, and then to become that everyday starter at shortstop. Does he return? It'll be interesting to see if he does come back, just simply because, I mean, that spot is a huge spot, and it's tricky at LSU when you are that guy at shortstop. There's a lot that comes with it because you've had so many phenomenal guys like Kramer Robertson, Alex Bregman. There's a lot of pressure on you. So does he return knowing the heat that he's going to face for another year at LSU to hopefully make a deeper run? But also with his eligibility, with him being a junior, he's not going to have a ton of leverage with the draft the next year as being a senior. So there's a lot of question marks. I know for sure, I think coming back, you'll have Cade Anderson, you'll have Milam Brown Larson, Josh Pearson, who will be a senior, and his brother's coming from West Monroe. So you have a lot of guys that are returning, but there's just so many question marks of who goes in the portal, who are you going to try to replace then? But I would leave it up to Jay Johnson to definitely go out and get some big names out of the portal, especially with some of the guys who have already put their name into the portal without even supers being here yet. So I'm interested to see how Jay comes back and kind of fills this roster in the holes. But you talked about it earlier, Mike, with last year, Tommy White was your only everyday starter from a national championship team. I think you've got a great foundation with the, especially these four freshmen that you use in big spots this year.
And then, Chessa, looking back at last night's game, we've gotten more questions about the decision to pull Ackenhausen for jump in the ninth than, you know, the kind of comments that you saw last night on social media about Jake Brown's error in the 10th. And I want to get your thoughts on that decision from Jay Johnson, where Ackenhausen comes in. I don't want to say he necessarily emptied the tank, but he got those three strikeouts, you know, brings it to the ninth inning. They're still clinging on to that 3-2 lead. Do you think it was, Mike and I talked a little bit about this, do you think it was kind of pregame determined that had they had the lead entering the ninth inning, that they were going to go to Gage Jump, who had thrown 102 pitches on Friday?
Oh, absolutely. I think especially after using Griffin Herring, you don't really have that true closer to go to. I think that was the call probably before even game one of the regional, because that's how Jay Johnson, he coaches so far in advance and plans out everything, that I'm sure that was already in the works going into the weekend. It's hard to go back and forth between that call. Absolutely, you think, oh, Nate just struck out the side, why not put him back out there? But I kind of like the call from Jay. Obviously, I don't like the outcome, but when you're down to your final three outs, you want your guy on the bump, and that has been Gage Jump. He's been the absolute most consistent from start to finish. Why not hand him the ball? But the thing for me is, I understand where he's coming from, but it's a huge difference from starting a ball game and going 5, 6, 7 innings deep like Gage has done throughout his season throughout the year this year for LSU, coming in a high leverage spot and trying to empty the tank. Then what I've seen from Gage, he kind of needs to settle in that first and second inning. And so to me, it's like, man, I understand you give him the ball, you want your ace, you want your guy to get the job done, but it's just such a huge spot. I would feel more comfortable going to Gage strictly because, again, that's your best pitcher that you've had all year. But Nate has been solid. He was solid for that inning, striking out the side, so why not go back to him? But, again, hindsight 2020, I'm kind of like Jay. I'm more of the consistent, maybe unusual decision-making, especially when the ball game comes down to, you know, this inning or maybe the next two innings. You want your guy on the mound. So that's, I would have made the same call. Again, 50-50, you never know what's going to happen, but I think that was the best opportunity for your team to win.
You get paid a lot of money when you're a manager of a major team, but you got a lot of sleepless nights, Chessa. You got a lot, because you can second guess yourself over and over again, and you made, you know, you made the best call that you thought, you know, you're trying to win the game. Herm Edwards would say it. We're trying to win the game at this point. When you look at it, other than an SEC team, I think Charlie and I talked about this. North Carolina seems to have all the ingredients to win a national championship. If it's not a Tennessee or an A&M, I think North Carolina, is there a better outfield than what they have? And those guys are great on defense.
Freaking absolute studs, the range too. I think North Carolina is going to be the team to beat, and I'm not going to hate on Tennessee, even though I'd love to hate on Tennessee because of Tony V and his antics, but if I put my money on any team, it would be in UNC. Just from top to bottom, they have the pitchers. To win in Omaha, you have to have that 1-2 punch. They have it. They have the closer. We saw that last night. And they're back. They really are. They take great at-bats. That's what I think was one of the more disappointing things. Tommy White, his last at-bat in the purple and gold was horrendous. Like, the swings he took, his approach, everything was just like, this is not the Tommy White that we've gotten accustomed to seeing. And so to me, it was just, I think UNC showed its dominance, and it also had arms to go to, and LSU didn't really have the arms to go to, which is the reason why he had to go to Gage Jump. So, yeah, I think UNC is the team to beat in Omaha for sure.
I think they're just complete, right, Chessa? Like, there's no other real word for UNC. They play great defense, and you saw that on display last night. They were excellent defensively, and that's part of the reason why LSU...
it's hard to beat the champ.
No, it is.
It's hard to beat the champ. I don't care if it's the same team. Man, it's hard. Man, that champ goes down, and it's difficult to knock them out.
Great defense. Yep. They got the star power offensively. Mike and I talked about it. They have one of the best outfields in college baseball, and then you saw their pitching rotation last night. Like, I mean, once again, their defense played a great game.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettillo along with Charlie Long in studio on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line from Baton Rouge Proud. She covers the LSU baseball, LSU basketball, LSU football. Can't put that all on a business card. Chesa Boucher, thank you, Chess, for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Chesa, one of the things you got to say, I think all of us knew this year would look different from a year ago. And it's hard to replace talents like a Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz. Charlie and I talked about it. You know, even people like Trey Morgan, Gavin Dugas, those type of people. It's difficult because not only you lose the talent, but you also lose a little bit of chemistry. And now it's ever changing now in college sports, that the chemistry wise, you got to build throughout the season. I thought Jay did a very, very good job this year. Kind of try to steady the wheel when you 3-12, you're struggling. You and I talked about it. We didn't even know if this team could make it to the SEC tournament. And then they get there, and then you thought it was going to be a short stay, so you just brought one bag with you instead of the two or three. So you had to find the laundry after. One of the things I think gets overlooked in this is when you're trying to recycle a team and retool it, it's a lot more difficult than what the average person out on the street thinks it is. Not only because of talent, but also because of the chemistry part.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest key pieces to this team and why they struggled in the first half of SEC play was because of the chemistry. What I saw from the team, a lot of the guys from last year's team, the national championship team, it was almost like a divide of the guys that won it and then the new guys that came in, and they didn't really mesh very well. And you could tell, like, even talking with Michael Braswell, he said there was kind of a different vibe heading into the season. And then when Jay kind of put the clamps down and he took away the phones and he's like, no, we're going to be a team. I think they really came together. And I'll be honest with you, Mike, I kind of hated on Tommy White there for a few weeks, so talking about how he didn't have a ton of leadership and he was more of a doer and just not a born leader. But in the back half, and especially in postseason, I saw Tommy kind of come into his own of taking charge of this team and being that front runner for this team. And I think that was a lot of the things that they missed. They just didn't have a true leader. You talked about a Trey Morgan. You talked about a Dylan Cruz, who was a silent leader, but he was a leader with his play on the field, and especially Paul Skeens, an absolute alpha male who those guys wanted to follow. And I think a lot of that, the problems in the front half of the SEC play, it all came down to chemistry and leadership, and I think he lacked two of those with this team. I think in the back half, you saw some of these true freshmen come in and take on roles that you might not have expected from younger guys, and they started learning how to win. Before, it was like they didn't know how to win, and then all of a sudden, they put a few wins together, and they were like, oh, this is how it goes. So it was such a tough loss last night to sit there and watch. I was actually telling my boyfriend of, like, the year before, we knew this team, we were watching a national championship team, and we knew they had it in them. But to see the turnaround of the underdog of being like, oh, hell yeah, we're about to, like, go on this run, you really fall in love with a team like that, of seeing them do the unthinkable. And so when it comes to essentially two outs in the SEC championship game against Tennessee, and then essentially two more outs against UNC, the number four team in the country, It hurts a little bit more. So today I might not be as hyped up as I normally am. It sucks. It sucks that it's over with.
Well, you're a former athlete, okay? You're a former college athlete. You understand the heartbreak of losing. It's like wide world of sports playback. But I think what you brought up, the freshmen, they the building blocks for next year for this team. What do you look at position-wise that they'll be looking at in the transfer portal? Because that is such a big part now, especially college basketball and now college baseball also. It plays a part in college football, but I think in baseball and basketball, it's a bigger piece of the puzzle.
Oh, it's huge, and I don't envy Jay Johnson. I will tell you that the teams that are in the super regionals and the teams that are going to Omaha better watch out, because Jay Johnson now has a lot more free time to go out there. And we know he is the portal king when it comes to getting recruits to come to LSU. Position-wise, I think it's hard to really figure out what you need just because of what you're losing. You have seven that are completely out of eligibility, so they're gone. Then you have four guys that are going to the draft with Holman, Jump, Tommy White, and Thatcher Hurd, I would assume all go to the draft. And then you have some other guys like Jared Jones, who's a draft-eligible sophomore. You have Griffin Herring, who's a draft-eligible sophomore. And then someone like Michael Braswell, who he improved drastically from last year at South Carolina, where he wasn't your everyday starter, and he was kind of used here and there, and then to become that everyday starter at shortstop. Does he return? It'll be interesting to see if he does come back, just simply because, I mean, that spot is a huge spot, and it's tricky at LSU when you are that guy at shortstop. There's a lot that comes with it because you've had so many phenomenal guys like Kramer Robertson, Alex Bregman. There's a lot of pressure on you. So does he return knowing the heat that he's going to face for another year at LSU to hopefully make a deeper run? But also with his eligibility, with him being a junior, he's not going to have a ton of leverage with the draft the next year as being a senior. So there's a lot of question marks. I know for sure, I think coming back, you'll have Cade Anderson, you'll have Milam Brown Larson, Josh Pearson, who will be a senior, and his brother's coming from West Monroe. So you have a lot of guys that are returning, but there's just so many question marks of who goes in the portal, who are you going to try to replace then? But I would leave it up to Jay Johnson to definitely go out and get some big names out of the portal, especially with some of the guys who have already put their name into the portal without even supers being here yet. So I'm interested to see how Jay comes back and kind of fills this roster in the hole. But you talked about it earlier, Mike, with last year, Tommy White was your only everyday starter from a national championship team. I think you've got a great foundation with especially these four freshmen that you use in big spots this year.
And then, Chessa, looking back at last night's game, we've gotten more questions about the decision to pull Ackenhausen for Jump in the ninth than, you know, the kind of comments that you saw last night on social media about Jake Brown's error in the 10th. And I want to get your thoughts on that decision from Jay Johnson, where Ackenhausen comes in. I don't want to say he necessarily emptied the tank, but he got those three strikeouts, you know, brings it to the ninth inning. They're still clinging on to that 3-2 lead. Do you think it was, Mike and I talked a little bit about this, do you think it was kind of pregame determined that had they had the lead entering the ninth inning, that they were going to go to Gage Jump, who had thrown 102 pitches on Friday?
Oh, absolutely. I think especially after using Griffin Herring, you don't really have that true closer to go to. I think that was the call probably before even game one of the regional, because that's how Jay Johnson, he coaches so far in advance and plans out everything, that I'm sure that was already in the works going into the weekend. It's hard to go back and forth between that call. Absolutely, you think, oh, Nate just struck out the side, why not put him back out there? But I kind of like the call from Jay. Obviously, I don't like the outcome, but when you're down to your final three outs, you want your guy on the bump, and that has been Gage Jump. He's been the absolute most consistent from start to finish. Why not hand him the ball? But the thing for me is, I understand where he's coming from, but it's a huge difference from starting a ball game and going five, six, seven innings deep like Gage has done throughout his season throughout the year this year for LSU, coming in at a high leverage spot and trying to empty the tank. Then what I've seen from Gage, he kind of needs to settle in that first and second inning. And so to me, it's like, man, I understand you give him the ball, you want your ace, you want your guy to get the job done, but it's just such a huge spot. I would feel more comfortable going to Gage strictly because, again, that's your best pitcher that you've had all year. But Nate has been solid. He was solid for that inning, striking out the side, so why not go back to him? But, again, hindsight 2020, I'm kind of like Jay. I'm more of the consistent, maybe unusual decision-making, especially when the ball game comes down to, you know, this inning or maybe the next two innings. You want your guy on the mound. So that's, I would have made the same call. Again, 50-50, you never know what's going to happen, but I think that was the best opportunity for your team to win.
You get paid a lot of money when you're a manager of a major team, but you got a lot of sleepless nights, Chessa. You got a lot, because you can second guess yourself over and over again, and you made, you know, you made the best call that you thought, you know, you're trying to win the game. Herm Edwards said it. We're trying to win the game at this point. When you look at it, other than an SEC team, I think Charlie and I talked about this. North Carolina seems to have all the ingredients to win a national championship. If it's not a Tennessee or an A&M, I think North Carolina, is there a better outfield than what they have? And those guys are great on defense.
Freaking absolute studs, the range too. I think North Carolina is going to be the team to beat, and I'm not going to hate on Tennessee, even though I'd love to hate on Tennessee because of Tony V and his antics. But if I put my money on any team, it would be in UNC. Just from top to bottom, they have the pitchers to win in Omaha. You have to have that 1-2 punch. They have it. They have the closer. We saw that last night, and they're back. They really are. They take great at-bats. That's what I think was one of the more disappointing things of, Tommy White, his last at-bat in the purple and gold was horrendous. Like, the swings he took, his approach, everything was just like, this is not the Tommy White that we've gotten accustomed to seeing. And so, to me, it was just, I think UNC showed its dominance, and it also had arms to go to, and LSU didn't really have the arms to go to, which is the reason why he had to go to Gage Jump. So, yeah, I think UNC is the team to beat in Omaha for sure.
I think they're just complete, right, Chessa? Like, there's no other real word for UNC. They play great defense, and you saw that on display last night. They were excellent defensively, and that's part of the reason why LSU...
And it's hard to beat the champ.
No, it is.
It's hard to beat the champ. I don't care if it's the same team. Man, it's hard. Man, that champ goes down, and it's difficult to knock them out.
Great defense. Yep. They got the star power offensively. Mike and I talked about it. They have one of the best outfields in college baseball. And then you saw their pitching rotation last night. Like, I mean, once again, their defense played a great game, but North Carolina's pitching, once they gave up the lead and they were down 3-2, they gave up one hit from the fourth inning to the 10th against the defending champs. So I agree with you 100%, Chessa. But if you're looking past UNC, I know you talked a little bit about Tennessee. I mean, who's your favorite now to win the 2024 College World Series?
I go back and forth between A&M and UNC. Mm-hmm. The reason why A&M, they have the arms. Last year, they didn't have the arms, but they had the bats. Now they have both this year. And Jim Schlossnagel is a hell of a coach. He knows how to win in the postseason. So I wouldn't want to bet against him. And like you said, with UNC, they just impressed me defensively on every level, in the infield, in the outfield. They just didn't make a ton of mistakes, and the one or two mistakes that they did, LSU capitalized on. But I think they'll definitely clean that up as they get into the super regional placement or playing against a West Virginia team who's never even made it to a super regional. So UNC being a blue blood program, they already had the leg up on that, but also just their arms. And like you said, nothing beats consistency. When you're consistent, it's hard to beat them. I would pick UNC to win it all this year.
Chessa, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. Look, I'm going to give you a little bit of time off, and then you're going to wake up one morning, and you're going to say, what? Fall practice is here already for LSU?
I know. I'm already going to be sweating my eyebrows off at fall camp. I can't wait.
Chessa, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a good one.
All righty. Chessa Boucher, sports reporter for Baton Rouge Proud, covers all aspects of LSU sports for Baton Rouge Proud. We'll be back to finish it up here on Sports Talk in hour number one right after this break. We're finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettey along with Charlie Long. I want to thank Chessa Boucher for joining us the last half hour. Great information from Chessa always at 5:20 this afternoon. A little afterwards, Fox Sports' own, also Louisiana's own, Timber. Brando will join us talking. Timmy can talk anything. If it's college football, pro football, man, he was there when Skip first started everything up with LSU baseball. We'll talk to Tim about all that and a lot more right here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.